Formula One fans will know that next weekend it's the Australian Grand Prix, the third Grand Prix of the season. It would traditionally have been the season opener. And we're delighted to say that from next Saturday, Galway BFM will have a regular slot on Formula One. And that's with thanks to Dara Kenning, who's with us in studio. Dara, first and foremost, thanks for being with us. And tell us a little bit about your own app, P1, and of course your interest in Formula One.
Yeah, thanks very much for having me, Ollie. My own app is called P1 Predict. And that came about during COVID when we were locked down and eventually we started watching Drive to Survive. I used to watch a lot of Formula One when I was a kid. And I suppose when you come into your teenage years, you get different interests, explore different things. So I left that behind. But Drive to Survive kind of reignited it. I loved the stories behind it. What was happening off the track was quite interesting. But what was happening on the track for those few years was very interesting. I suppose I came in at a good time in 2021. Where we had the Verstappen-Hamilton battle going down to the last race of the season and all the drama that came out of that. So I was completely hooked on all of that. And from that, we started. It was a very simple idea at the start. I just asked my friends for predictions. We'd all watched Drive to Survive and I thought, right, this season, what do you think is going to happen? We predicted what would happen at the start and we checked them at the end. The next season, we kind of made it a bit more advanced. Unfortunately, at the time, I was laid up with an injury. I'd snapped my Achilles and I had gotten COVID a week later, so I had a load of time on my hands. Built out a prototype in Google Sheets. And what we did was every week we predicted the top five drivers for qualifying and then the top five for the race along with the fastest lap. And that turned out to be a bit of crack. It kind of added another layer of engagement to the weekend. Every weekend, everyone came back because we're all competitive. And that's as competitive as I could get being laid up on the couch. And the following year then, I lost my job as part of the tech layoffs. Unfortunately, I was working for a big tech company, Canadian tech company, and I got let go along with the rest of my team. So I had a load more time and I decided, right, let's put some of these skills to use and build out an app. So that's where P1 Predict was born. Launched it, had an overwhelming response. I had to close off the subscriptions because I was almost afraid of what would happen to the servers and I wanted to be able to use it. Ran a really good beta test last year, got a load of great feedback. This year now we've relaunched it and we're doing a proper push and we're seeing again an overwhelming response from all over the world.
That's what I was going to ask you. It's not just Ireland you're getting subscribers.
Yeah, that's right. We have people in Venezuela. We've got people in Europe. We've got Belgium covered, the UK, Ireland, Northern Ireland. We've got people over in California using the app. It's been amazing. Absolutely incredible.
And how much of that is down to Netflix and Drive to Survive?
Well, I suppose that the app wouldn't have been born without Netflix or Drive to Survive because that's where it came from for me. But I firmly believe that the majority of people that are using the app now have come from Drive to Survive. There definitely are people there that I know are diehard Formula One fans and always have been. But I think they're the minority at the moment. I think people are quite enjoying watching some of the stories play out. I think that's one thing Drive to Survive does really well. It kind of, you know, the on-track battles are interesting, but they're not interesting for everyone. I mean, if you sat there and watched a race, you know, 90% of it isn't too engaging for everybody. But there are human beings driving those cars. There are characters. I suppose Formula One has to be perfect. Like, everything about it, that car has to be set up perfect. The drivers have to be perfect. But as humans, they're flawed, and there's a lot of drama and stuff that happens outside of it. You get to understand and get to meet the characters. And I think that's what makes, I think that was, for me, I suppose, lucky timing in that, you know, making these predictions. We all know who these drivers are. So it's not just names anymore or names behind a helmet, which if I watch another single-seater series, I find it hard to connect with it until I watch some sort of documentaries because they're just names and helmets at the start.
Now, it couldn't be easier to predict P1 for the last year and a bit because Max Verstappen has won 20 of the last 24 races. I mean, he completely dominated last season. He's most likely going to win 18 or 19 of this season's races. So does that make your job a bit harder?
It does and it doesn't. I mean, things will change. There are cycles. Lewis Hamilton dominated for 7 years and that cycle ended. Somebody will break Max Verstappen's cycle. And at the moment, the team that could break a cycle is his own team. There's a big power struggle there at the moment. And he could leave Red Bull, despite it being the dominant car. But Max Verstappen also has made it clear that he's not here to win 7 or 8 championships. He's got his eyes on other series as well. Like, he has a team in, I think, the World Endurance Championship. So he's not fully committed to Formula One either. He could leave, which would shake things up nicely. And I know we have joked in P1 where we'll rename the app soon to P2 because he has P1 sewn up. It's not a challenge anymore. We can see the data coming in the app every week. You know, 80-90% of people are choosing him. And then you've got 10% who are dreamers and want somebody else to win. And we all want things to happen. But unfortunately, the only way that I see him being knocked off this year or another winner is some sort of a wet race that equalizes the field and you get some front or some back runner gets in there. There's a red flag and it shuffles things up. That's the only way I'm seeing Max being knocked off.
Do you watch any of the historical ones like, you know, Hunt Lauda, their great battle in the mid 70s? Go on to Prost Senna. I mean, in the 90s, they were halcyon days for Formula One because you never knew from week to week what was going to happen.
That's true. And I suppose the chase for perfection in the modern day, the amount of data that they have, the simulators that they have, the wind tunnels, they can see exactly how these cars are going to pan out. I'd imagine in the 70s, they obviously had wind tunnels and they could see, but they wouldn't have had the level of data that they have now. So like that opens up the field. The likes of like Prost and Senna, those races were incredible. And the cars that they were driving were incredibly physical. It's a physical sport now. Obviously, the G-forces that those drivers are pulling are crazy. But yeah, like being able to watch a race and not know who wins it obviously makes it a bit more entertaining. It's not as entertaining at the moment, but there are a lot of stories. And I think the stories are what are keeping people quite engaged this year. And also the fact that next year, I suppose there's a crazy season in the driver market coming. There's a storm coming pretty soon in that I believe the number, there's at least 8 drivers on the current lineup that don't have a contract next year. So there's going to be a massive shakeup in terms of who goes where. You've also got new teams coming in as well. The likes of Audi are going to come in 2026. So there's changes coming and there's another regulation change in 2026 as well. And I know that they've made a change, I think it was only 2 years ago, to help, you know, improve the overtaking and stuff, because that is an issue. Like there are people complaining, and I suppose there's pressure on them now to keep it engaging because of Drive to Survive. But there's another regulation change coming, and hopefully that fixes some of the issues that we're seeing.
I often wonder how teams can be so far ahead in terms of, you know, the technical ability of a car to be a minute ahead of another car in a Grand Prix race. Like, why is that? Are there engineers? Is there a couple of really, really top-class boffins that the top teams have that the other teams don't have? Or why is there a gap? Is it money?
Money's a big part of it. If you think about the like Williams, how dominant they were in the past. Like, they've won world championships, but I guarantee you anyone that's watched Drive to Survive wouldn't have ever bet that they have. They're a back marker for a long time now. But they're an independent team. And they've kept independent for as long. I know they've been overtaken or kind of taken over by a conglomerate recently. And you can see that they're starting to make strides again. But they dominated when I think it was solely based on engineering. And then they started to fall by the wayside when money came into it. Like a lot. I know it's a very expensive sport anyway. But you have the likes of Mercedes and Red Bull getting money pumped into them. I think it's a lot of it's money. But then you have the standout. Like if we think about aerodynamics, that's a massive part of Formula One. How well that car handles or moves the air around it. Adrian Newey is by far the most successful aerodynamicist that there is on that grid. And he's with Red Bull. And like they've last year, they had that season sewn up halfway through the season. They started working on this year's car 6 months before everybody else. So that helps too. Now there is an effort from Formula One to try and stem that and try and even things out. So they've got a cost cap now. So all teams they can't spend more than, I can't remember what the number is, but they all have to adhere to that. But they also have a system now where the 10 teams in Formula One, they all get time in a wind tunnel to test out their, you know, designs for the coming year or to test out parts. But that time's also limited. And what they're doing it now is the team that finishes last gets the most time in the wind tunnel and the team that finishes first gets the least time. So there's efforts to make it a bit more competitive. But yeah, you've got, I suppose, with the likes of Red Bull, if we look at that now, you've got the stars have aligned. They have Adrian Newey and Max Verstappen on the same team at the same time. Max Verstappen is an absolute prodigy. Like, there's no doubt he's the best driver on the grid, driving the best car. He's going to win.
No contest. Yeah. I often think of the American football, you know, where they give the worst team on any given year the pick of the best college players the following year, to try and always have this equilibrium, a bit like a horse racing handicapper. And is there any interest in Formula One to have every car at equal level? I know you're talking about that there, but does it suit them to have a dominant force?
I think money talks, unfortunately. And there are, like, the feeder series, F2 and F3, all use the same chassis. They all have the same car. So you can see, like, whoever wins that championship wins it on merit. They're solely based on the driving skills. F1 Academy, that's also, they all drive the same car. I believe in IndyCar, there's two chassis that they can choose from. But in Formula One, it's a team-by-team chassis. That they build their own chassis. They do, like, the engines, Ferrari would give Haas an engine, and they have kind of setups like that. But I'd love to see it evened out. I'd love to see, because you're always going to have the debate, is Max a better driver, or is Lewis a better driver? And then there's always the debate, well, you know, they've always been in the best car. So it's very hard to see who really is the best driver when you consider how dominant the Red Bull car is compared to, say, the Williams at the moment, or a Haas car. They could be incredible drivers. Nico Hülkenberg drives for Haas. Incredible driver. Never been on the podium. But if you put him in a Mercedes or a Red Bull, I guarantee he would get on the podium. He's just been, I suppose, unfortunate, maybe not the right word, to just drive for the wrong teams at the wrong time.
Interest in Formula One in Ireland specifically then has obviously peaked with a combination of factors. And I think it probably goes back, does it, to Eddie Jordan and the physical interest we had in seeing a tricolour on the podium at a number of Grand Prix. Do you think we will see an Irish person with a tricolour on a Formula One podium anytime in the next few years?
There's hope. There is hope. So there are multiple single-seater series around. So we've got some in the UK and we've got some over in the States. In the UK, we have, I think there's three Irish drivers in those series. There was news this week. Yesterday, a 20-year-old, Brandon McCaughan, has signed for KMR Sport, and they are in the GB4 series, which is a championship that's geared, it's in Britain, but it's geared towards young guys and girls coming out of karting. So it's a kind of a transitionary championship to move from karting to the single-seater series, and then that would feed into the F3. And from F3, you go F2, and then F2, F1. So we've got Brandon McGaughan there. He's after starting, 19, 20 years old. We've got an 18-year-old from Offaly, Alex Dunn, who's in F3 this year, and he's racing for a Dutch team called MP Motorsport. And they're supporting Formula One for a few races this year. And in Bahrain, in his first race in F3, he came 12th, and in his second race, he came 9th and scored points. There's an option there. Now, the thing is, there's a lot of politics at play, and there's money talks in Formula One. So in order for the likes of Alex or Brandon there to get into Formula One, they're going to need a lot of financial backing. You've also got, if we jump across the pond over to the States, you've got James Rowe, who's flying the flag for Ireland there in the Indy NXT series. And that's very similar to F2 and F3 in that it's a feeder series for IndyCar. Now, what's interesting here is that James drives for Andretti. And Andretti have made attempts in the last couple of months to get into Formula One as an 11th team. The bid has been blocked and it's not going through at the moment. Now, they're probably going to loop back and try another way in. It could eventually take over a team. I could see the likes of Haas jumping ship if they keep falling by the wayside. But it's a long shot. It's a long shot. But having that connection with Andretti, James Rowe could be there as either a reserve driver or as one of the first choice drivers. That is a long shot. I suppose our best bet is, at the moment, we've got a driver called Zach O'Sullivan. He's a British driver, but he's of Irish descent. I don't know if there'll be a tricolour or a Union Jack, unfortunately, but Zach O'Sullivan, I mean, that's an Irish name there, anyway, the surname. He's driving in Formula 2 for ART Grand Prix, and he was the runner-up last year with F3. Now, the interesting thing here is he's already in with one of the Formula 1 teams in that he's a member of the Williams Driver Academy. So we have, there's a lot more Irish drivers coming into the single series. It's difficult, I guess, because a lot of the Formula 1 drivers, they come from a karting background. And there's karting tracks all over the UK and, like, different levels. In Ireland, it's not as prominent. There are karting tracks set up and there are competitions, but it doesn't seem to be as big of a thing. So these young guys will have to go to the UK. You'll see some of them will go to Italy. There's championships there. You'll see some drivers go to Japan and race in the series there, and some have to go to America. And that's all, I suppose, the pinnacle, as always, is Formula One, and they're trying to find their own unique ways into it.
When are we going to see a woman driving in Formula One?
Hopefully soon. Hopefully soon. We've got the Formula One Academy, and there's a massive push there this year for that. That's come in a couple of different formats over the last year, but the Formula One Academy this year has seen some big sponsors jump in. We've got Tommy Hilfiger is in there, and we've got, I think there's six teams. They supported the Formula One race in Saudi Arabia. This year is big because all of the Formula One Academy races will be televised. So they'll be either on their YouTube channel or on whoever's broadcasting the race in that area. And it's interesting there because that's also a series where they all use the same chassis. So that's purely based on the skill of the driver. And look, it's not just the driver, it's a team sport. Although we only ever hear about the driver's names, there's a team of people behind them. You've got engineers, you've got the pit crew. All of that makes a massive difference. But there are some incredible drivers. You got Jamie Chadwick. She is in IndyCar and NXT, the same series as James Rowe. She's also connected with Williams, and she's tested out a Williams F1 car before. I think at the moment, I would see her as probably being the best shot of seeing somebody coming in. How far off we are, I don't know. I think there just needs to be more opportunities for women, and I think the F1 Academy is a big one. And look, it's caused, not controversy, but it was entertaining. So they had a two races, a sport in Formula One in Saudi Arabia, and Dorian Pin, French driver, dominated the first race. Incredible drive. A lot of people say that she should be in the F1 feeder series, so either F2 or F3 to start testing her out. And she won the first race by, I think, 20 seconds. She won the second race by 2 seconds, but there was an issue in that she didn't realise she had gone through the checkered flag, and the team didn't tell her she had gone through the checkered flag, so she continued at full speed on her warm-down lap. They had to wave a red flag to slow her down. She won the race, and then afterwards had a 20-second time penalty applied, lost the race because of a technicality. So it's a negative, but it's got a lot of people talking. A lot of the F1 personalities, Damon Hill, Karun Chandhok, they've all weighed in, all agreeing that it was a bit harsh. I think a fine for the team if it's a communication piece is enough, but to kind of...
Take a race off her and she won it.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's a bit daft.
And she dominated the weekend. So.
We started, Dara, by talking about next weekend. It was always, for me, the traditional start of the season, the Australian Grand Prix. What can we expect other than a Verstappen win?
I think we're going to have an interesting race. Last year, okay, we're talking about getting up at 4 a.m. here to watch it. It's always a risk. You don't know what's going to happen, but I think it's worth it. Last year, I did get up for it, and I was well rewarded. Now, a crash is always quite scary. Last year, there were 3 red flags in the race. It was insane. We had Leclerc out in the first lap. He got beached in the gravel. We had Albon hit the wall in the seventh lap, sprayed gravel all over the track, and they had to red flag it. Race gets back underway. There's 58 laps. On lap 54, Magnussen clips the wall, loses a tyre. They have to red flag it. So there's a stand and start. Turn one, absolute chaos. 3 or 4 cars clip each other. The 2 Alpines take each other out into the wall, destroy the cars. They have to restart it again for the 3rd time. They eventually kind of ran out of laps and had to finish the race behind the safety car. So Max Verstappen won that, Lewis Hamilton 2nd, and Fernando Alonso came 3rd. Now, the thing with this is we've got 2 home drivers to look out for here. Danny Ricciardo wasn't there last year, but he's back this year. He's obviously a big draw. He's not in the best car and he's not had the best start, but you've got Oscar Piastri, this young guy. He's in McLaren. He's doing incredibly well. He won a sprint race last year in his first season. He's got Rookie of the Year. He's at home in Melbourne. I think he's got to be watched. I'm kind of hopeful, maybe a bit too optimistic. I'd like to see him on the podium, maybe 3rd. It's an interesting track. It's technically a street track. It's bumpy. They have resurfaced it, but we've got, you know, it's a public road most of the time. They've got concrete barriers very close to the track. But it's a hybrid track. So you've got some very fast sectors that have runoff, in that you've got a gravel track, you've got grass. So it makes for some quite interesting racing. Historically, you know, the last 5 years, you're looking at Ferrari winning 3 out of 5. Hard to see that they'll do that again. I think at best they'd probably get a second place with Leclerc. Verstappen's going to win it, and I think Perez is going to be up there as well.
All right, Dara, listen, thanks a million for popping into us. A preliminary chat before we get our regular Formula One slot on a Saturday afternoon underway with Dara Canning from P1 Predict. That's coming up next Saturday afternoon on Saturday Sport here on Galway Bay FM.